Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They got it right, and we're seeing it played out because, gee, nobody wants to pay attention to history only because we quit teaching it. And yes, this is Tom Navolis, your host, and I am so delighted that you are here. If you recall from last week's promo, which you can go and read at samueladamsreturns.net, you will see there, as I love to take and bring to bear, that Samuel Adams, as well as many of the other founders, really said what? That we should teach our young not only to love the country, but to teach them about true morality and what it means to be in a constitutional republic in such a way that we teach the truths of republicanism, that being the means of governing, as well as that America has much to learn as individuals from our history. So today we're going to jump back into those mirrors of history, as I like to call it on this program. And we're going to take a kind of a walk through some of my most enjoyable readings in the Anti-Federalist, because they're absolutely pertinent again this week in particular, that being the about Judge Amy Barrett and the Supreme Court. And my good read is always those articles by none other than Robert Yates, the Anti-Federalist, whose pseudonym was Brutus. And we're going to go through some of that, and we're going to talk about, as you saw in the promo, the fermenting the court or poisoning justice. Fermenting the court or poisoning justice. I had to think about that. And geez, you know, here we are in the fall and everybody's out there hitting the farmers markets and we're picking a lot of our peppers for Pepperlicious. That's pepper-licious.com, where you can definitely support the work that we're doing by buying our jams and pepper products. Only if you live in Ohio. I have to say, I had a very nice lady. I don't know. I think she's nice because she tried to buy some of our products and she lived in Illinois. And, you know, I had to refund her money because I can't sell out of the state of Ohio. And we don't want to be entrapped by that in any way. And, you know, nicely, this person saw us and bought some product from us. And we quickly returned her money to her and sent her a nice thank you email for thinking of us. But those in Ohio, and you that know people in Ohio, definitely go to pepper-licious.com to support samueladamsreturns.net. How about that? And you could see all the programming on Facebook. There is stuff on Facebook, but actually it's on YouTube is where you can watch the videos. And as you see in the promo and on the website, all the places you can get the podcast. And we really want to get these podcasts out there. So make sure you tell all your friends to sign up at samueladamsreturns.net for our weekly newsletter. But fermenting the court or poisoning justice, I said, we've been picking peppers. And I mean, it's like pick a peck of peppers is like a lot of peppers to pick. But what do you do with them? Well, just no different than you do with cabbage or beans or other things. You ferment them. You ferment them. And I use the term fermenting the court because Robert Yates talked about it, and we're going to kind of extract some of those ideas. But when we define fermenting is a good thing. I had thought that potentially I would call this pickling the court. You know, put it in a jar, kind of put the lid on, pour your brine in there or whatever it is that you use and pickle the court, you know, and the court's getting pickled. Well, no. In reality, the court is something that is fermenting. And it's been fermenting from the very first court in many different ways. And then the poisoning side of the fermentation, if you understand fermentation, which I'm going to give you a definition. Here's a definition of a fermentation, and I'm kind of going to bring it out here on the bottom. I hope it shows up good for you in the video, or maybe I'll just pop it in front of me here as a slide, is that fermentation is that chemical breakdown of a substance by bacteria, yeast, or other microorganisms, typically involving effervescence and the giving off of heat. Well, the effervescence is giving off CO2. Oh no, climate change. We got to quit fermentation. We got to quit making all that wine. You got to quit making all that beer, because we're going to take and ruin the environment by giving off all that CO2. Right. All right. That's another thing that's crazy. So it is, you know, part of the thing is the process of fermentation involves the making of beer, wine, liquor, in which sugars are converted to ethyl alcohol. Well, you know, that's all good things. Fermentation has been used for eons to preserve food. It's basically, and properly done, you use a saltwater solution to take and process your food for storage. In the case of making really good hot sauce, which we can't sell hot sauces because we are a cottage industry, but we can give you a recipe for making those hot sauces using our peppers at pepperlicious.com, in that you can take, and in that fermentation, it uses bacteria, good stuff that's good for you. And it takes and it works on the tissues. It works at the cellular level. It develops it in something that may, have a sour taste, like kimchi or, you know, a hot sauce. And yet you can take and add other things to it to make it viable for the future, for a long period of time. And yes, the process does what? It also gives off heat. Well, the judiciary is something like that. If you want to kind of snap it back to the reality of what's been going on. But what we're seeing in the actions of the Senate, especially by the Democrats, because now we're seeing their evil even more predominant when it comes to a constitutional right of a president to take, and especially with the Senate in majority, where there is absolute historical precedent that all the pundits are already bringing out, to take and confirm a justice by a president at the end of his first term. Now, you have to remember that that did not happen with Obama because of the socialist that he was and still is, producing his army of Antifa, BLM, and such, so on and so forth, in such a way that, you don't want to put another communist on the court. And remember, I told you guys when Kagan was put on the court, she's a communist in such a way. Now, here's something that some people are interestingly shocked by. So when we take and we look at from None Dare Call It Treason, and I have the one 25 years later as well that I quote from often, we're going to get into the Anti-Federalist Papers in a minute. But I wanted you to understand that back in the early 1900s, you know, when you start looking at what was going on, we have to go back all the way to Sidney Webb in 1888, and then how in the number of years socialism in England was circulated at Harvard and other schools of economics and then schools of law. So by 1905, American Fabians had formed the Rand School of Social Science in New York, and incorporated the Intercollegiate Socialist Society. Within 3 years, chapters were formed at Harvard, Princeton, Columbia, New York University, and University of Pennsylvania. Very predominant schools in what? Education and law. Education and law. So here's something that should smack you right between the eyes, which it, because a lot of people don't go back and read these types of things, is that early adherents of the socialist movement in America included swamp monsters like John Dewey, education, Walter Rauschenbusch, theology, Walter Lippmann, government and the press. And here it is. Here it is why putting in constitutionalists on the Supreme Court is absolutely critical. You know, we had a messed up court right out of the gate, and there were bad decisions that started chipping away at constitutionalism on some early decisions, which I've talked about in other programs on the court. But I want to remind you that the Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter was a socialist. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a globalist, so that means being a globalist, a hardcore globalist, you have to be a socialist. And what people don't remember with all the accolades that have been given to Ginsburg, that she was one of the first justices other than Frankfurter that clearly articulated in many of her writings and in some of her judgments that the world court, the globalist court, was the means and mechanisms by which we should adjudicate here in the United States. Now, some people, you know, they look at me, but I brought this out in my book, you know, From Covenant to the Present Constitution. And in there, I think I quote Stormer a little bit, but I quote many other sources where it comes to entreaties. And when we understand that we have engaged in many treaties to our negative, to the defeat of our constitutional reason and rationale, when we ascend to different UN adherences, then what we have done is we are executing according to the purpose of the Constitution that say that treaties become the law of the land. And to Justice Ginsburg's credit, she was one of the few that were willing to admit that she would adjudicate inclusive of treaties. She would make her Supreme Court judgments according to globalism. She would make her Supreme Court judgments according to the UN and global intent for America, which we all know is socialistic and communistic, which we're seeing. So as we look at what happened in so many different ways, and we're going to talk in the next couple of segments, we're down to our last minute, is what the Democrats are doing is they're using frivolity and stupidity in the minds of anybody that is a constitutionalist to hammer on Judge Barrett and insulting her in so many different ways about those things which should never be a so-called litmus test that they never did for Kagan, they never did for the other socialist slash communist on the Supreme Court. So what we have is the conundrum that we have had socialist and we do have communist on the court, globalist on the court, but to keep the court fermenting in a way with the correct ideas and good bacteria that will be good for the country, we have to go with founder's intent and constitutionalism. Sam Adams understood that. The Anti-Federalists understood that. And I hope you will understand this as we go forward into our next segments Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists got it right. And here at Liberty Works Radio Network as our primary location, I am so thankful to be here. And as I always do in this segment, is take the time, please, go look at all the other programming that is there. Take a look at, you know, what is the live programming. There's some really great stuff that's on every weekday. And I want to thank all of you that are listening to me on the three different time segments that I'm on Saturdays, actually, a Friday night, late Friday night, and then for the West Coasters, which is 1 a.m. Saturday for the East Coasters, and then again at 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. here at Liberty Works Radio Network, where what? Liberty works for you. So how about working for Liberty a little bit? How about taking those couple extra moments and find that donate button and help keep the network on the air, help keep that great programming going forward? I appreciate it. I'll tell you what, we have some really great people that work back there and all of the back numbers and producing everything and making sure that the programming is up, ready, and going for you. So once again, go to LibertyWorksRadioNetwork.com, get on board, find a donate, and let's keep Liberty alive, both on the airwaves as well as with all the various programming that's here. So that's kind of an interesting segue. Not that I meant it to be that way, because I got a couple other things I want to jump in here into this segment on. And before we jump into, yeah, you know, it's going to take me a while, and you're going to have to go read things to get the whole truth and nothing but the truth there in the Anti-Federalist Papers. But it brought me to the point that everything that's going on right now in keeping the airwaves free for liberty, we absolutely know what Twitter has done in regards to the Hunter Joe Biden story and none other than the Google Schmoogle Facebook and all of the other leftist entities out there that are a charade for a public square when in fact they are acting as none other than media giants. Yeah, we got to do some other things that help move them in away. And there is some things that we need to do, obviously, in the Federal Communications Act and make some changes there with 320 is one of the subsections that needs to be changed so these people can be held accountable for their insanities. A couple things that I do not want to leave you with hanging from last week in particular, but when I was hammering on all of the mental health stuff, just real quick, what I want to do is that in John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later, there is a section in here on mental health. And I want to read this to you because as we look and as I sit on a mental health board for my county and I see all of the insanity of good people that are on the board who don't understand what it means to maintain the liberties of people, but that all people are crazy. You know, you're crazy. Didn't you know you were crazy? Watch, you know, your eyes are going to flit. You're going to do all these other things. You're going to fall off your chair. Oh, no. You're going to take and run out into your yard without your clothes on. Oh, no, you're not that crazy. But because if you have ideological differences or morality, then you're crazy. Why do I say that? Well, here's a quote that opens up this chapter 9 in Stormer's book that says mental health. The pretense is made, and I'm quoting here directly, the pretense is made that to do away with right and wrong would produce uncivilized people, immorality, lawlessness, and social chaos. The fact is that most psychiatrists and psychologists and other respected people have escaped from moral chains and are able to think freely. And that was a quote by Dr. G. Brooke Chisholm, first head of the World Federation of Mental Health. Chisholm was directly involved in taking and destroying the morality in America. He started back in 45 with the likes of a William Allison White Psychiatric Foundation, and delivered a number of speeches, one in 1945 to a large group of psychiatrists and high government officials. Here's what Chisholm said, and I quote, "What basic psychological distortion can be found in every civilization of which we know anything?" That was a question. "The only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is morality. The concept of right and wrong, the reinterpretation and eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belated objectives of nearly all psychotherapy. If the race is to be freed from its crippling burden of good and evil, it must be psychiatrists who take the original responsibility." Chisholm was obsessed for years with these ideas, and in talking about the love of country, right and wrong, and morality in children, which, as I already told you in the first segment, was what our founder said, we needed to inculcate morality in children. Here's what Chisholm says, in as being paramount, that parents are evil. Parents are the paramount evil. In another speech, he said, "The people who have been taught to believe whatever they were told by their parents or their teachers are people who are the menace to the world." So when we see Antifa, when we see all these other things out there, we can thank in so many different ways the Mental Health Association, psychiatrists, and all of those out there who have been taught by what? None other than in New York, New York University, Harvard, Yale, all of the Ivy League schools and all of that, which utilize these theories of psychiatry and psychology. And I spoke to you about that last week in my personal experiences and why I could not be a part of that nonsense. And so much that I see in now taking and trying to bring the psychology into schools the way they are under social emotional learning is to continue the destruction of parents and morality and everything that is good, right, and evil, and patriotism in our children. So enough of that. Let's get back to the Supreme Court. Why it's really critical to understand who in our modern times should be sitting on that Supreme Court, and why we want people that have an understanding that is going to sit and look at the Constitution in such a way that they're able to discern it from a concept of original intent. Because as we will see here in a bit, is that Brutus talked about it not being discerned that way or interpreted that way as things would go forward, which we're seeing that today. And so here is something that we see that after the appointment of Earl Warren as Chief Justice of the United States, we'd have these great impacts in destroying the security laws of the United States, not fully felt for several years. And then two Eisenhower executive orders effectively closed the door on congressional investigations into communism in the government. So what we have is Warren appointment to the court and to the Supreme Court in the first eight cases involving communism in which he participated. He supported the communist position five times. The government's case on three occasions. After that, Warren supported the communist position in 62 cases without deviation. Ooh, my goodness. The critical reasons for having someone on the Supreme Court is here. Earl Warren, Chief Justice, supported communist cases 62 times. in the 3 years between 1956 and 1958, that period, the Supreme Court decided 52 cases involving communism and subversion in different areas of government. The decision supported the communist position 41 times and anti-communist position only 11 times. Warren's consistent pro-communist vote were the deciding factor in many of the narrow 5-4 decisions. In contrast, in the 10 years prior to Warren's appointment to the court by Eisenhower, the court decided 37 cases involving communism and subversion. Of these, 23 were decided against the communists. The communist position was upheld only 14 times. So what we have is that the Supreme Court being apologist for communism in America. So I had a conversation with somebody, as I mentioned, I think last week a bit, is that, you know, what happened? What were some of the things that occurred in America? And it wasn't just the legislative side. It wasn't just what happened in the bureaucratic side. It wasn't just what happened in that of the UN treaties and all of that. But what happened inside our courts? And these were some of the things that our friend Brutus took on very, very clearly. I mean, as I noted in the promo, that at one point you could say that what Brutus says here, and I'm going to requote it right at the moment, is that there is no power above those in the Supreme Court. Okay, you have to understand that. There's no power above them to control any of their decisions. There is no authority that can remove them, and they cannot be controlled by the laws of the legislature. In short, they are independent of people, of the legislature, of every power under heaven. Every power under heaven. That you know, the expectation is that the judiciary, all those that would be in government, as I always said, that the Federalists expected to have a moral and virtuous people instantiated in government. Whereas the Anti-Federalists, once again, would say that, no, we would end up having a lot of immoral, ungodly people. Therefore, if you are in a position of Supreme Court justice and you do not bow your knee before the living God, there's nothing above you. And then he continues in his writing, men placed, and this is what I quoted in the promo, men placed in this situation will generally soon feel themselves independent of heaven itself. What do you do with that? We have no means or mechanisms except for, you know, taking and impeaching them, which the Democrats are clear on taking and throwing that word of impeachment of a justice. Look at that. They want to, whereas we have socialists and communists on the Supreme Court, and they should be impeached for subversion in their decisions, because once again, as we've already articulated, is that we've seen decisions that have been pro-communist, especially during the Warren Court. And if you take the time, we can find others that lean that way. When you look at the decisions on that, which especially Ruth Bader Ginsburg would do in relationship to universalism, globalism, and treaties, and using them against we the people in court decisions, even if they were dissenting positions, thank God there were good people that could stop some of those that she was on. So we need Amy Barrett. We need her to protect our Constitution. We need her for all the reason that all the pundits out there are yammer-hammering about, but not giving you the historical context of. I intend to do some more of that right here from the Anti-Federalist Papers as we get into the next segment. What do you need to do? Well, at this point, your charge is to go vote. and vote for the only choice you have is every Republican out there, even though some of them are squirrels. Sam Adams understood it. The Anti-Federalists understood it. Stand for morality and virtue in government. Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this last segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those Anti-Federalists got it right. This is Tom Nivolus, your host, and I am delighted that you're still with me. Because when I look at a lot of things on YouTube, you know, some folks only hang in there for the first 5-10 minutes and gone. You know, so it's always interesting to try and develop a program that you will want to hang in there with me and listen to or watch on YouTube. Remember, go to the Samuel Adams Returns channel, which is all one word. Samuel Adams Returns channel on YouTube. And if you click, what did they say? If you click like, and then I forget what the other thing is. I never get it right based on all the other people that have it down. But subscribe. That's it. Subscribe. If you subscribe to that, you'll see my smiling face. If you go to our website of SamuelAdamsReturns.net, there you can get the podcast directly. Or you can go to iHeartRadio and all the other places that you can find out about on our promo that comes out once a week. So if you go to SamuelAdamsReturns.net, you can sign up, get your friends to sign up, and you can either listen to this as a podcast or watch it on YouTube. With that, welcome back, all of you folks and Screaming Eagles. I know, Soaring Eagles Radio, but, you know, I love calling you my Screaming Eagles out there in Lima, Ohio. So thanks again to Kathy and Dr. Mike Spaulding for all the work that they're doing out there in Lima. Now, we were talking about Brutus and the Supreme Court, and I was quoting a bit from the other articles that he wrote back in March of 1788. But let's go back here into January, 31st of January, and I'm going to read it more clearly from my marked up book. I mean, if you're looking at this on YouTube, my book is like, you know, do I spend any time in studying the Anti-Federalist? Nah, I guess not. Anyway, the bottom line is that what Brutus was saying is that, you know, what's left on the Supreme Court? What's going to happen? And some of the things that he says is that you can't remove them, as I mentioned in the last segment as we closed out, is that you can't displace them except if they're convicted of treason, bribery, high crimes, and misdemeanors. Which high crimes and misdemeanors is always that, what is it? You know, how do you define those misdemeanors in relationship to impeachment, if you will, displacement, as he calls it. So what do we do? He goes on to say, and we're just going to take it from him here, and I think I've talked to you about this before, but this is real critical when it comes to understanding, and this is just a piece of it. I have listed for you in the promo all of Brutus's, you know, Robert Yates, who, I got to take a second on this one. Backtrack. Robert Yates, very humble man, from the perspective that when we look at who Robert Yates was, Robert Yates being a judge, the primary attorney, if you will, under and for New York. He was like the Attorney General of New York in our modern times in some regards. He was closely allied with Governor Clinton of New York, and he was the head of the delegation at the Constitutional Convention of 87 from New York, and he was the one that forced the withdrawal of the New York delegation because he saw so many different things that were happening in the Constitutional Convention that would impair our future liberties, including what he saw, what was happening with the judiciary. So, but Robert Yates says of himself in reflecting on that whole section, in this section of the judiciary in the Constitution, you know what? I may not be the right guy to be able to, you know, be talking about this. Humble man, but understood law and the essence of it to the details that he could talk about this. So I have a high regard for him when it comes to the many things that he predicted would happen here. And he said, this part of the plan is so modeled as to authorize the courts not only to carry into execution the powers expressly given, but where these are wanting or ambiguously expressed, to supply what is wanting by their own decisions. In other words, some of the things he was talking about is, you know, these guys are going to start making decisions based on their own prejudices and their own political ideologies. He says here, you need to examine this thing from this perspective. You know, you need to examine the nature and extent of the judicial powers and inquire whether the courts who are to exercise them are so constituted as to afford reasonable ground of confidence that they will exercise them for the general good. Well, in our modern times, we sit there and we look at the courts, not only the state courts, but in the federal judiciary in particular, is that what we see instead of the young jurist, what was he, 41 years old, there in the district court in Pennsylvania around Pittsburgh, who threw out the governor's insane orders on locking down everyone there, that he operated, and when you go read that decision, it was functional upon constitutionalism and foundational liberties and the ideas of what our rights are. But, you know, according to the mental health entities, because he's patriotic and he knows that truth, you know, they could classify him as mentally ill. So, did I say that? Yeah, well, you know, go back. You got to read that in Stormer, that whole section. I think, you know, if there was a way I could reproduce that for you, I would. But you have to understand that, don't get me going back on that topic. We're trying to stay focused here on the court. Hold me to that, Cat. You know, let's stay focused here on the court, on these judicial powers. Here it is in Article 3D, Section 2D. It is said that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. You see, that's something that Brutus Yates brings out that a lot of people don't want to understand as well. So the treaty shall be made. So when we go to environmentalism and all these other things and what is already, if you go and you start unpacking the UN, which I do in my book, From Covenant to the Present Constitution, that again, I'm promoting it because it goes into this. This is the stuff I've studied for you and try to bring it into some aspect of reasoning and rationale for you, is that even treaties that aren't even treaties, what they are, is that they're UN ideas. They're UN letters of saying, yeah, this is what we want to do. They're under all these different things of, you know, global religion, global education, all of this other nonsense. Well, according to the Constitution, as defined and which is being brought out by Yates, Ruth Gator Bins, whoever she was, she's dead now. Anyway, she took and she adjudicated and she wrote decisions based on exactly that understanding. And the latitude of the construction that this clause should receive is not easy to say. A first view would suppose that it means no more than this, that the court under the general government should exercise not only the powers of the courts of law, but also that of courts of equity in the manner in which those powers are usually exercised in different states. So what it means is that now you're extending that federal government court system, which we needed a court system under the Articles of Confederation, but is now overreaching on top of the states without question. And with the whole idea that, you end up with visitors that can be knocking at your door and they're not anything meaningful from true construct. Okay, so, you keep going on. So here we have is that there's this whole idea of what's going on with this article, and the court is authorized to determine all questions that may arise upon the meaning of constitution in law, which that's the argument of a living constitution or not, or whether it, what is determined by the justices and those in the federal judiciary. You have to understand the way that the Judiciary Act that came about right after the Constitution was put into play allowed for the court to take and put out all of these other subordinate courts. And they were designed by Congress. And that is, the Congress has that right to give the court the ability to add all of these other courts into the system of jurisprudence. So when we have district courts and we have the appellate courts, you got to remember that at the beginning, the Supreme Court justices were also the district court justices, and they got on their horses or their carriages and they rode out to the other states in the new United States and heard cases out there in those other states. Well, that's kind of tiring. Get up on your horse. It's time to hit it, Justice Marshall. Let's get out there, giddy up. So the Judiciary Act of the early 1800s allowed for subordinate courts. So here he's talking about that. This article vests the courts with authority to give the Constitution a legal construction or to explain it according to the rules laid down for construing a law. That's interesting. Can the courts make law? Not really, but do they? Well, under this is what Brutus said. There's those that would do that. These rules give a certain degree of latitude of explanation. And that is the rules of how you construct law, construing law. According to this mode of construction, the courts are to give such meaning to the Constitution as comports best with the common and generally received acceptance of the words in which it is expressed. And so when we look at the definition of the words, let me finish this statement, and then we'll talk about something that happened yesterday as well. And I don't have the exact, anyway, regarding their ordinary and popular use. So he wants the received acceptance of the words in which it is expressed regarding their ordinary and popular use rather than their grammatical propriety. Where words are dubious, they will be explained by the context. The end of the clause will be attended to, and the words will be understood as having a view to it. And the words will not be so understood as to bear no meaning or a very absurd one. So the way that words are used, and as we saw that every dictionary in America changed the definition of a word yesterday based on how the Democrats were using that word, and you'll have to go look it up. I don't have time to give it to you. Using that word during the hearings of Amy Barrett. So, wow. Did we just predict that? Did Brutus just predict that words, not just from a popular usage, but a whole determination of meaning again that changes the context and the intent of law and then how it would be looked at in the future regarding the determination of how to interpret the Constitution? Wow, we just swallowed a lot. What are you going to do about it? I don't know. This was maybe an exercise in futility based on the fact that a lot of people don't want to dig in and understand how the judiciary works. Sam Adams did. And he says, you know what? You all took and just succumbed to the Constitution. Now you got to live with it. Now, fight for it is what we have to do. Fight for the right to keep our rights under that Constitution. Come on back next week.